You're listening to the Casting for Fun podcast, the show that talks about entertainment, sports, music, and inspirational stories for all to enjoy. We're glad you could join us today. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Now, here is your host, Albert Pineda.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Casting for Fun podcast. I am your host, Albert Pineda, coming to you on Wednesday, March the 4th, 2026. Thank you for your patience, everybody. I know I missed last week's episode. I'm constantly amazed at how great and awesome my listeners are and how patient you are. So if you can be patient with me in the foreseeable future, that would be great. I'm going to try and continue to do consistently releasing episodes on Wednesday, but I might not always make it. I'm kind of hesitant to already plan and prepare or announce what next week's episode is going to be. I'm tentatively planning to do episodes about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze, for its 35th anniversary, and I definitely want to cover March Madness. I don't know when they're going to be coming out later this month, but thank you for your patience. I mean, hit subscribe on your podcast player of preference, whether it's Spotify, YouTube Music, Apple Music, Amazon Music, even iHeartRadio if you do that. That way you never miss an episode. And then, of course, follow me on social media like Facebook and Instagram, and you'll definitely get wind and hear of when new episodes are coming out. But anyways, for this week's episode, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Brat Pack classic movie, The Pretty in Pink. My wife Allison will be joining me, and we're going to go over this movie extensively, so much that I want to dive into with this. But before we get to Pretty in Pink, there are some housekeeping items, some items that I want to discuss, and I'll probably put a timestamp in so people can skip ahead if they wish to, so they can jump ahead to the Pretty in Pink conversation with my wife Allison. But, you know, I want to make mention that My listeners, and particularly my guests on the show, you guys mean the world to me. So thank you. You guys are awesome and great. And I definitely want to give a special shout out and tribute to all the guests who've ever been on the Casting for Fun podcast. Former guests of the show, Chris Parson, and of course the Parson family. They're very close to the Pineda family. Matt, Tamala, great. A bunch of people. I love the Parson so much. The patriarch of the Parson family, Michael K. Parson, recently passed away. So my deepest condolences go out to the Parson family. Michael K. Parson lived a really fascinating, interesting life. I mean, I love the books that he wrote, The Inheritance and the Messenger and the Melodic Transfer. Really great stuff. I mean, I definitely recommend giving those books reads when you get a chance. And yeah, my deepest sympathies go out to the Parson family. I love you guys. Michael K. Parson and his wife Terry, who passed away the year prior, they both meant a lot to me and to my family. So again, they'll definitely be sorely missed. But I do want to also touch now on cool news involving another former guest of the Casting for Fun podcast, my good friend Peter Hauge. I just got word. This is so cool. My good buddy Peter Hauge, who you probably remember from Back to the Future episodes, The Neverending Story, most recently Batman 66 2 months ago, back in January. He was on the television game show Hollywood Squares. And he won.
All right, Tiff, we got to get to the show.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, Allie, tell the stars a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Allie. I come from Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
And I'm living my dream right now, telling stories as a comic book artist.
Oh, that's awesome. We love that.
All right.
All right, Peter, it's on you. Tell the stars about yourself.
My name is Peter Hauge. I'm from Los Angeles, California.
All right.
I am a map librarian for Los Angeles Public Library.
Wow.
I am in charge of one of the largest map collections in the country. Ooh. And I still have an old Thomas guide that I keep in my car at all times.
Nice.
I want to see that Thomas guide.
I will show you that Thomas
Tiffany,
guide.
Tiffany, stay away from him. I found the only man in LA that can read.
Yeah, that joke from comedian Whitney Cummings is really, really funny. Yeah, apparently Peter is the only Angelino male who knows how to read. But so it was great to see Peter do so well and actually win the competition. Let's dive into a little bit more of this the episode with Peter actually winning the whole thing for Hollywood Squares.
All right, give it up for that. So, Peter, any idea what you would do with all that money?
as a map guy, I have always dreamed of going on the most epic road trip along Route 66.
Nice.
Wow. Check out all the sights, all the little roadside attractions, the neon motel lights.
We're all rooting for that, right?
Yeah, we are.
All right, listen, here is how the bonus round works. You are going to have 60 seconds. I will read a statement about each star. All you have to do is agree or disagree. For everyone that you get correct, you will earn that square. Now, every star up there has an envelope, but only one of them is holding a card that is worth $25,000.
Nice.
So, let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Here we go. Ariana DeBose's character in Hamilton was named The Bullet.
Agree.
Correct. Joe Coy once bought 100 koi fish as a joke.
Agree.
Incorrect. Fortune Feimster realized she was gay while watching a Lifetime movie.
Agree.
Correct. Whitney Cummings has seen every episode of Dr. Pimple Popper.
Disagree.
Correct. Drew Barrymore and Corey Feldman went on a date when they were kids.
Agree.
Correct. Lil Rel Howery founded a co-ed kickball league for Chicago youths.
Agree.
Incorrect. Gabriel Iglesias owns over 30 Volkswagen buses.
Agree.
Correct. Ryan Fitzpatrick once did a naked lap around Harvard Yard.
Agree.
Correct. Tiffany Haddish once peed on a stranger who was stung by a jellyfish.
Agree.
Incorrect. But you got 6 out of 9.
I'm nasty, but I ain't no hero.
You feeling good about your chances?
I feel great.
You should feel great.
Yes.
Stars, show us the money. Ariana. Ryan. Drew. Hey, yo, Peter, thank you for being here, man. Congratulations. And thank you to our stars. Of course, thank you to our citizens.
Yeah, great job, Peter. I was so happy to hear the news and to hear about him winning. And deserving guy, absolutely. And I hope, Peter, I hope if you're listening, I hope you get to spend your money and enjoying that road trip through Route 66. I'm sure you're going to have a blast and love it if you actually get around to doing it. And I hope you do. And it was pretty cool. Like when I saw it on social media, Peter had posted it on his account. It was really cool to see that random strangers were mentioning that Peter, the contestant, they didn't know who Peter was. I mean, they were just mentioning the contestant looks like a hotter blonde version of Andy Samberg and Adam Driver, which is so cool. It's awesome to see that. So congratulations, Peter. It makes me happy to know that my friends are doing well and having success and doing fun things like this, because again, the Casting for Fun podcast is possible because of my friends. Yes, I do solo episodes every now and then, but again, the main excuse for the podcast was to get to talk with friends, particularly friends who I haven't talked to in a while, and just enjoy the things that we love. So congratulations, Peter. Very happy for you for winning. There's probably a few other items that I probably should bring up. You know, new music. You know, the Silver Sun Pickups released a new album, Tender Hooks. Their single, Au Revoir Reservoir, is really awesome. So check that out if you haven't already. And then, of course, there's going to be some new music from Orange County legends, punk rock legends, Social Distortion, Born to Kill. Their first new album in 15 years. Very excited for that. That's going to be coming out May 8th, 2026. So keep an eye out for that. Here's a little bit of the title track, Born to Kill. Yeah, really great stuff. So, you know, so much going on that I just wanted to share. But again, I'm also kind of busy with other things going on in my life. So if I don't get episodes out consistently on Wednesdays, please forgive me. But again, hit subscribe and definitely take a listen on your favorite podcast player of choice and then follow me on social so you don't miss an episode. But I guess that's enough of me rambling. But let's go ahead and dive into this week's topic of conversation, which is going to be the movie Pretty in Pink with my wife, Allison. And stay tuned for next week or the week after. We'll see how it works out. But the tentative plans are to discuss Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze, and March Madness coming up. So stay tuned for that. Thank you, listeners. And let's go ahead and do this. Pretty in Pink with my wife, Allison, here on the show. Welcome back to the show, my wonderful wife, Allison. Allison, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm great. How's everybody?
We're all doing great. Thank you. Always great to have you on the show. We concluded the year last year with great conversations about the Thanksgiving-themed episodes of Friends. And then, of course, Edward Scissorhands for its 35th anniversary. Now we're doing another noteworthy anniversary. It's the 40th anniversary of Pretty in Pink. One of the most quintessential, like, best and well-beloved Brat Pack movies of the 80s.
It's such a good movie. I love it. One of my favorites.
Oh, very cool. So it's interesting to think about that aspect, you know, think about that concept, like, you know, the romantic drama comedies, like chick flicks, as it were. Obviously, I mean, being married for as long as we've been and, you know, dating for as long as we were before that as well. I know that your all time favorite movie is Ever After. But so Pretty in Pink, is that rank up high as well? Is it one of the best romantic comedies, romantic, you know, chick flick movies? Because there's so many to choose from, right?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not the best. Ever After is better. I would say My Best Friend's Wedding is even better. Like, there's a lot of really great ones, but Pretty in Pink is a classic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And again, I had so much fun a year ago, a little over a year ago, with my good buddy Sammy discussing The Breakfast Club. So it just seemed, you know, perfect timing to talk about Pretty in Pink, which is also celebrating its 40th anniversary, like The Breakfast Club did last year. But a few interesting facts before we get into the movie itself that, you know, first released on February 28, 1986. So actually, technically yesterday, as of this recording, yesterday was technically when it turned 40. Considered to be a John Hughes film, even though technically he didn't direct it. He actually just wrote the screenplay, was heavily involved in its production, but it was directed by another gentleman, Howard Deutsch, if I'm saying his name right, who would also go on to direct another 80s written Howard Hughes, I'm sorry, John Hughes movie, Some Kind of Wonderful, and is married to 80s actress Leah Thompson. I thought that was kind of interesting too.
That is cool.
Yeah. And then, of course, reportedly, Molly Ringwald was the one who introduced John Hughes to the band The Psychedelic Furs, who wrote the song Pretty in Pink, you know, years before. And he based his screenplay off of that song. And that's maybe one of the reasons why I enjoyed this particular movie so much, because of the great 80s music, like, you know, bands like The Psychedelic Furs, New Order, OMD, and we're going to definitely talk very extensively about OMD in this podcast, The Smiths. So the soundtrack, I thought, was really excellent.
It's going to be good. I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess Molly Ringwald is kind of, was at the time, would have been considered like the it girl for, like, you know, America's Sweetheart. I mean, 16 Candles in 84, The Breakfast Club in 85, and then, of course, Pretty in Pink in 86. So I guess throughout our culture of our country, we'll have, like, a girl who maybe would be considered, like, the sweetheart of the country for a certain period of time. And at the time, she would have been.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she definitely has, like, the the, you know her name, you heard, see her face, you know all the movies she's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, what I find most interesting about this movie is the ending. So I'm going to give you some information about that. We've talked about it before, but maybe you don't really remember exactly. But the way it ends and the way it could have ended and the fact that the ending got changed resulted in the OMD song If You Leave getting written. So it's going to be a really interesting conversation when we get to the end of the movie. But like we do here on the show, we're going to talk about some of the favorite scenes from the movie itself. I'll insert audio clips as necessary. But then as we get towards the end, there's a few clips that I want to show you, which I think will be very interesting when we talk about what the ending we got and the ending that we could have gotten.
Sounds good.
So, okay, yeah. So the movie starts out with like just the fact that Blaine, played by Andrew McCarthy, and what am I trying to think? I had it here on my note. Andy, thank you. Andy, Andy, played by Molly Ringwald, are from two different social classes where Blaine is the rich kid, Andy's like the poor working class. So I guess sometimes when you have these romantic movies like this, like you present different type of leads where they may not necessarily seem like they're compatible, but in the end, they actually do work out, right?
Wait, are you talking about the guy she ends up with?
Yeah.
Well, let's get to the ending and talk about that.
Okay. But I mean, basically, so she has a crush on a rich guy. She has her best buddy, lifelong buddy, Ducky, played by John Cryer in the movie. And I guess we're going to dive into that concept as well. But which of the two was actually the better fit for Andy, right?
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about. But let's save it for when you're ready for that.
Okay, we'll save it for later. So the movie also features a great cast, like you mentioned before, as we did our rewatch of the movie to kind of prepare for this podcast. It features Annie Potts, Janine from Ghostbusters. Really mm-hmm. cool that she was in there. She's her boss at the record store. So they have a conversation about prom, and I'll insert the audio clip here, but it's prom is a very unique aspect, I think, for teenage culture. You know, most people go to their proms, or maybe they don't go to their proms. They dread going to the prom because they seem like it's just an overstuff, like just get dressed in fancy, but it doesn't mean anything, or some people consider it a magical night.
I think you went to your prom.
Yeah, sure.
Was it terrible?
It was the worst. But it's supposed to be, you know? I mean, but you have to go, right?
Well, you don't have to. I mean, it's not a requirement.
I have this girlfriend who didn't go to hers, and every once in a while she gets this really terrible feeling, you know, like something is missing. She checks her purse, you know, she checks her keys, she counts her kids, she goes crazy, and then she realizes that nothing is missing. She decided it was side effects from skipping the prom.
I don't know. I mean, part of me says just go and get it over with, and this other part of me says it's a stupid tradition, and what's the point?
Well, you know, you could say that life itself is a stupid tradition. Don't analyze it. Just go.
And you don't. As your husband, I actually don't even know if you went to your senior prom. I should have asked that question.
I think you know because there I didn't go.
That's right. I think, we did talk about that. Yeah.
No, I didn't go to either, and that like crushed me. I remember as a teenager being just devastated that I didn't go. Mm-hmm. We had recently moved both times when I had like a junior and a senior prom, and so I didn't really know a lot of kids, and I wasn't like really. I was really really new to the school, and so it's expected with the scenario in my life, but it still was like being the kind of like girly girl that I was growing up. I was so sad that I didn't get to go because, you know, every girly girl dreams of prom. Mm-hmm. And I just remember crying the whole night through, and my mom had to go and do something with me to cheer me up. And both times I was just like devastated. And now I look back and I was like, it wasn't the end of the world, but I still hope for Avery's sake that she gets to experience that when I didn't.
I hope so too. I think it'll be a really fun, great time. And, you know, I do love, I mean, we're going to be just deviating a little bit. Like, I love that our church puts on what's called the Mormon prom. So it's mm-hmm. actually a pretty cool, like, maybe less pressure, right? That you get to go with people who held the same standards that you do, and you know that it's going to be a good experience. I mean, not so by no means at all am I going to say prom is a terrible experience, because I mean, I did go to my prom, even though I did have a bad experience, and I've kind of shared that with you before. Yeah. In the past. I won't mention names because, I mean, if you know me well, and if you know me growing up, you know exactly who I took to my prom. but I will say that even though the evening itself didn't turn out very great, I am on good terms with this individual. She's a great friend. I mean, I haven't talked to her in many years, but and I even mentioned in the Depeche Mode conversation I had last year with my buddy Joel about the concept of a Depeche Mode song, Blue Dress, and she wore a blue dress, which I thought was really cool. So yeah, prom is a very complicated thing for teenagers, right? But again, that being said, I do think it's really fun, and it's fitting that it was used in this 80s movie, because again, for teenagers back then, I mean, like, prom would have been like the end all be all, really.
Yeah, and I kind of like that about this movie, because it makes it a really big deal, and it talks about like the social part of going and who was popular and who wasn't, and who got asked out and who didn't, and waiting for to get asked. Like, I feel like those are all really, even though it's probably dramatized for the movie, it's also really realistic for a teenager's thought process, you know, with how prom is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, Blaine finds Andy, has interest in her, and asks her out to prom. But again, not out to prom just yet. I mean, ask her out just on a basic date is what happens first in the movie. But of course, Andy doesn't want Blaine to pick her up at her house, because again, she doesn't want to see where her and her father live. I mean, it's a single parent. Her dad's played by actor Harry Dean Stanton. And he's, you know, working class man, like not making a lot of money, and the mother left the family. So again, it's a difficult situation for her to be in. And I do kind of understand the concept of if you don't have a lot of money, you can feel inadequate with those who do. And the perception is that the rich kids of the school are jerks and terrible people and don't really want to be around with them. And then we also kind of hinted at it before, but I mean, her best friend, Ducky, who really has been friend zoned in this movie, right?
Like 1,000%.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for him, but also he's weird. So I don't know if I'd date him anyways.
Yeah. We'll touch more on Ducky as well. But actually right now, I do want to just mention, I'll insert the audio clip here. When he finds out that his best friend, Andy, is going on a date with a rich kid, he just totally loses it. So it is an interesting concept that, again, when you have the two romantic leads, one's very rich and popular, one is less rich and less popular. And then their friend is absolutely insistent on the fact that, hey, the rich people are always going to be the same. You can't date a guy like this. He's horrible for you, type of mentality. I mean, you do feel for Ducky, even though he is kind of a creepy weirdo at times, too.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Wait, you babes, like talking a sign language that the old ducker here just does not understand. Would you mind filling me in here? I'm a little confused.
She got stood up, twerp.
Stood up? Wait, how's... Wait, I'm here. Is this like one of those feminine mystique deals or something?
He showed.
Andy?
I'll get that.
Is this you're gonna go out with this guy? I mean, is this, you know, like a date or?
Yeah, I mean, you like him. He's not like the other guys. Seriously.
No, what? Oh, man, you really pissed me off. You know, cause you know everybody, including you. I can't believe you'd be this stupid.
I mean, I'm not gonna let anybody.
He's gonna use your ass and throw you away. God, I would have died for you.
So what am I supposed to do? He asked me out and I like him. If I hate him because he's got money, just listen to me. If I hate him because he's got money, that's the exact same thing as them hating us because we don't. Do you understand?
You can't do this and respect yourself. You can't.
Well, I'll make that decision, all right?
Sure, you can do what you want.
You know, you're talking like that just because I'm going out with Blaine.
Blaine? His name is Blaine? Oh, that's a major appliance. That's not a name.
Just because I'm going out with Blaine doesn't mean I can't be friends with you. I mean, it doesn't change the way I feel about you.
Well, that's very nice. I'm glad. Here's the point, Annie. I'm not particularly concerned with whether or not you like me. Because I live to like you, and I can't like you anymore. So when you get your heart splattered all over hell and you're feeling really low and dirty, don't look to me to help pump you back up, because maybe for the first time in your life, I won't be there.
I can't believe you're actually saying this.
Well, I guess that's just tough.
Yeah. But then again, so their date, again, it's kind of interesting. I wouldn't have done this. I mean, as a date, when you're taking someone out, I mean, Blaine, I think, made a huge mistake about not telling Andy what he was going to plan to do. So he takes her to a house party, with his buddy, Steph, yeah, played by, notable 80s bully and jerk guy, James Spader, who plays perfect as the role of this guy.
Yeah, he is.
So they go to a house party, and then she gets kind of berated and belittled by the bully girl who's been bullying her at school. But even though it was a bad mistake, I think, to take her to that particular house party, they do end up having a good night. I guess Blaine kind of comes to terms with the fact that he really wants to make, you know, develop a relationship with this girl, and then eventually she's able to come clean and tell him the truth of, like, I didn't want you to know where I live because my family's poor, I don't want you to judge me. They share a magical kiss, and he asks her to prom. So I guess, like, in a way, that's actually a cool move, even though there's more story to come.
Yeah. I know you want more, but I'm saving it.
No, you're fine. Again, like, the build up to the movie, the climax is cool, but again, once we get to the climax, maybe I'll go a little bit faster, because again, the climax, the ending of the movie is actually the most fascinating part.
Yes.
So he asks out Andy to the prom, and then Steph just berates him. I'll put in the audio clip as well, but again, James Spader just does a fantastic job playing the jerk rich high school bully guy, 80s theme.
I thought that was very uncool of you last night, Blaine.
What?
What?
You mean Andy?
Yeah, I mean Andy.
What's a big deal? I like her. Matter of fact, I was pissed off at you guys for being so nasty to her.
It was way out of order for you to foist her on the party.
Steph, you hear yourself? You hear the same I hear?
What, do I have to spell it out for you, Blaine?
I guess so.
Nobody appreciates your sense of humor, you know? As a matter of fact, everybody's just about to puke from you. You know, if you got a hard-on for trash, don't take care of it around us, pal, all right?
Right, buddy.
Listen, I don't need to learn this one, Blaine, all right? I really don't.
Money all that matters to you.
Where the hell does that come from? Come on, look around you. Would I treat my parents' house like this if money was any kind of issue? Well, why are you doing this? You know, why don't you just nail her and get it over with? You know, why are you getting involved?
Is there something wrong with that?
I just think it's stupid. You know, it's pointless. And your parents, I think they'll be thrilled.
They have nothing to do with it.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen your mother go to work on you, Blaine. You know, it's vicious. And when Bill and Joyce get through with you, you won't know where to sail. Listen, I'm getting really bored with this conversation, all right, Blaine? You know, if you want your little piece of low-grade ass, fine, take it, you know. But if you do, you're not going to have a friend.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you want to make the choice, go ahead, make it, all right? I personally wouldn't trash a friendship over it, but, hey, I'm old-fashioned, so. Why don't you take a shower? You look like...
And again, Blaine has some growing up to do himself, because again, it seems like he's very easily influenced by his bad influence friends. The fact that after he kind of gets like teased and berated and like chastised by his buddy Steph, who's not really a good guy at all, he starts distancing himself from Andy, not returning phone calls, and unfortunately, it gets to the point where it looks like they're actually not going to go to prom after all.
Yeah, which is also sad. Mm-hmm. all over again.
Yeah. So then what happens is we also, I mean, I'm skipping over a big part of the plot, but basically Andy, we learned that, is quite the seamstress, right? She's very artistically talented, is able to put together a perfect dress, a pink dress that's made combined with both her friend Iona, her boss at the record store, and a dress that her dad had purchased. So it actually makes it's a nice dress, right?
It's ugly.
Okay.
All of her outfits are ugly, but that's what makes it eccentric and supposed to make her look awesome. But they comment on that throughout the whole show too. Everybody makes fun of her clothes because clothes are weird.
Yeah. I guess if you don't come from money, you can't afford better clothes. And
yeah, I mean, I know she's trying to make them cool, and some people even with money will make their clothes eccentric, but it's just too eccentric for me.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't like her dress. And the only thing I like about it is it's pink.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
She's still pretty in pink.
There you go. So she goes to prom alone, but then Ducky's there too. To they go together. Like, she didn't want to give the rich kids the satisfaction. Like, you know what? I've kind of been bullied and berated and belittled by these rich social class kids that I'm gonna go ahead and go. Because again, you can't get the better of me. And then of course, Blaine is there as well. And Andrew McCarthy's hair looks weird. We're gonna talk about that, touch on that. And I'll insert the audio clip here. But finally, he said something really cool to her. The fact that, I always believed in you, but I never believed in myself. So basically he had to like stand up for, what he really wanted to have a relationship with this girl, and then tell off his buddy Steph and saying, hey, I mean, you know, she's a wonderful, great person. I don't care about money. You know, you're acting this way towards her because she actually turned you down. So it was kind of cool that he finally learned his lesson and to be accepting of Andy, of who she is, and to not be embarrassed. Because I guess sometimes for the rich kids, maybe they are kind of embarrassed about things like that. So he learns a lesson in the end, which is good. And then Ducky points out to Andy, you know, he came here on his own. You're right about him. He's not like the other rich kids. He's actually a good guy. And, you know, and tells her, hey, if you don't run after him now, you're going to regret it. So she chases him down in the parking lot. They share their magical kiss at the end, and that's the ending. That's Pretty in Pink.
Me to say I'm sorry.
It's done. It's over with. I'm fine.
Oh, well, if that's true, then I'm fine.
It's not true. It doesn't matter, does it?
You told me you couldn't believe in somebody who didn't believe in you. I believed in you. Always believed in you. You just didn't believe in me. I love you.
If you don't go to him now, I'm never going to take you to another prom ever again. You hear me? I mean, this is an incredibly romantic moment, and you're ruining it for me.
It's Becky.
Go ahead.
Go, that's pretty good. Good summary.
Okay, very cool. Now let's get to the ending, though, because again, this is very fascinating. That's why I'm so intrigued by the way this movie ended and the way it could have ended. So, in case you were wondering, it originally was written in the script that Andy and Ducky were actually going to be the ones to get together.
Oh, I don't love that answer either.
You don't?
No. Do you?
Not really, no.
Why?
Because, again, Andy's kind of – I'm sorry, not Andy. I apologize. Ducky is kind of a weirdo. Like, you know, I understand Ducky's kind of maybe, like, socially awkward, and he's putting on an act to try and look cool, because I've seen kids who do that, and maybe I might have been guilty of that in the past. Probably not, because I was actually a pretty cool guy. But but I do understand that he's kind of putting on an act to try and impress people. But the reality is that he definitely has strong feelings for Andy, even though he has been absolutely friend-zoned by this girl. But yeah. But apparently in the original script, it was going to be that the two of them were going to get together. And now I want to actually insert an audio clip talking about the original ending of Pretty in Pink and why it got changed. So let's go ahead and insert this here.
Okay.
The original ending to Pretty in Pink was very different than the movie as it stands now. And you can actually find that there was a novelization of Pretty in Pink written at the time that had the original ending because it was written from the original script. And people would write to me saying, how come the book is so different than the movie? The original ending was Molly shows up at the prom, Ducky shows up at the prom, they come together and dance a moonlight dance together, thus, you know, showing that their solidarity as friends would always be the most important thing in their lives, and that, you know, they're going to stick together, and despite all the rifts that had happened, that, you know, they have their pride and they'll show up at the prom and do their own thing.
Originally in the script, she goes to the prom with Ducky and sees Andrew McCarthy there, but she's with Ducky and their friends, and they dance. And everybody stood around and watched them dance.
Looks like I finally found a good tune. Well, shall we?
When we shot it, a bunch of things sort of conspired for it not to quite work. Molly became very ill that day, and we had to, doing the moonlight dance entailed a lot of spinning that wasn't real good for her stomach.
Just the turning and turning and turning. We kept doing over and over and over again. I just kept getting sicker and sicker and more dizzy. And it was definitely not very romantic.
So we'd be spinning, and she'd be looking at me like, you know, and I was like, oh no, this is not going to end well. This would be a bad ending for the movie. Pretty in projectile vomit.
After we were turning and turning and turning, and then I think I just collapsed.
And, you know, everybody, we had to stop shooting for the day.
But that's really all I remember about doing. I remember feeling it didn't work, and I remember just being really sick. I was supposed to end up with Ducky. And when Robert Downey Jr. was being considered for it, I thought he was adorable. I thought there's, you know, I thought he was cute. I was attracted to him. I'm making myself sound completely boy crazy, but I thought he was really, really cute. And it sort of made sense. I could end up with him at the end. I mean, once they cast John and we started working together, I thought there's no way that this ending's gonna work. With John, not to say that John isn't cute, not to say that he isn't adorable, because he clearly is, I just didn't have that chemistry with him myself. That's not the relationship that we had. So it didn't really make sense when we went to shoot the ending of us ending up together. It just seemed completely bizarre. It seemed like I was ending up with my brother. And I think I told Howie that, and Howie still wanted to shoot the ending, you know, as written. So I think they really did want me to end up with the sort of underdog, you know, goofy character.
Well, Molly never saw him as a love interest. She saw him as her best friend and somebody who would do anything for her, and she for him. But she didn't have those feelings for him. And you'd think that I would have seen that during the course of the movie. You know, that would have been the first clue, directorially, that this is not going to work as an ending. But it didn't. I didn't get it. None of us got it.
I knew it. I knew it wasn't going to, and then we filmed it. And I think they didn't really figure it out, the filmmakers, until they screened the film.
When we tested it, they loved the movie, and then at the very last moment, when Molly wound up with Ducky, they booed. We realized then and there that the right thing to do was to wind up with the guy who truly loves you. But the girls in the audience didn't care about that. They wanted to get the cute guy. And so it was a big lesson for us, which is forget the politics. When a girl wants the cute guy, she's got to get the cute guy.
And we were devastated. I mean, we felt that we were selling out, that she shouldn't end up with a rich guy. And we met with the head of the studio, who was Ned Tannen and Dawn Steele. And we finally realized that, you know, we're making a movie for the audience. So we thought, okay, we'll shoot an alternative ending.
It was very, very tough. John rightfully took his time and figured out a way to give them what they wanted, but at the same time to keep the integrity of the story. But he had so many things going on. I was sitting there in his house every night going, could we work on this? But he was like, well, how am I supposed to do this? So that the whole thing's geared toward true love. And then one day, we were sitting in the editing room, you know, and he went, I got it. It was just like that, the light bulb went up. He says, what if Andrew comes to the prom alone? And he backtracked from there, and he had it in no time at all. And that was it. But, you know, it was my first movie. I had everything on the line. I had given up my business. I moved out here, and here it was. I had an ending that didn't work with a studio that was really anxious about that. And he had done everything a producer you could ask a producer to do. And here I was going, but I need a new ending. He did it. He came up with that ending.
Yeah, so lots of fascinating stuff we learned from that firsthand experience from interview clips from Molly Ringwald, from John Cryer, from the director and one of the producers as well. Apparently, I guess fate was against them. Like, you know, Molly Ringwald was a little sick, maybe with the stomach flu, so she felt dizzy. Maybe her performance wasn't that great as a result of that. It was the studio's original choice to have Robert Downey Jr. play the Ducky role. If that were the case, maybe it would have tested better. Maybe he would have done a better job than John Cryer, who knows. And the fact that you had actually set up John Cryer's character of Ducky as really being like the friend zone kind of guy. I mean, how do guys break out of the friend zone? I mean, I did with you, right? Just barely.
Just barely. You're funny.
So yeah, it to me, it makes perfect sense to go with Blaine, but I'm interested to hear from a female's perspective. You kind of already made your hints made clear that you probably don't really like the Ducky character as a romantic option, but from that point of view, do you have a preference? Do you like Blaine over Ducky, or do you like the rich guy who needs to learn to be more accepting versus like the steady guy who's always there?
I like neither of them for her.
Okay.
Like, I don't like that she would end up with the friend that she didn't really love, but she kind of felt like she had to because he loved her enough. And I also don't love that she ends up with the guy who's, this is my biggest thing. I don't know how many spoilers I'm allowed to give.
Oh yeah, all spoilers you want.
I don't love when he comes up to her and says, I love you. Like, how can he love her? He doesn't know her. They've been on like, what, two dates? I mean, if that, right? Like, it's like, he doesn't love her. He doesn't know her. He just thinks he does. And she goes off with this guy who says that. Like, if a guy came up to me after two dates and said, I love you, I'd be like, you're weird and I'm out of here. So I don't think she should have ended up with either of them, I think. Mm. And this isn't supposed to be like independent woman thing. This is just that they're both crappy. And I think now, but then when you play that clip and you add in Robert Downey Jr. could have been that guy, then I'm like, she should have ended up with him. Because I, like, who wouldn't want to end up with Robert Downey Jr. at that age, especially in those movies in that time? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's interesting, though, that the people that they pick to act for them changed the entire movie course. Like, pick better. Like, if you wanted Robert Downey Jr. to get that part because you wanted the scene to flow and match your script, then you should have pushed for a Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. But did they think the Ducky character guy was a Robert Downey Jr.? And then, sorry, I have so much to say now. See,
no.
I told you I was waiting for the end. And then really, like, at the same time, like, I don't know. I guess I'm seeing the screening of them wanting him to go with the rich guy. And it's not about the money. It's just that he came up to her and said, I love you, after, like, barely knowing her. And that bugged me. And then she was like, yeah, he loves me. I'm going to go off with him. And then Ducky to say you should go with him because he loves you. That's weird, too. Like, Ducky fights for her this entire time. Gets so mad, shows up at the prom for her, and then he's like, yeah, go. Like, okay, so did you love her or not? Like, obviously not as much as you think, or maybe you loved her so much so you're gonna let her go, but it was really weird that he had like a sudden change of heart in like a split second too. Okay, your turn.
Okay, well, I guess that could be attributed to the fact that they didn't want to go with that new ending, with Blaine being the guy that she would choose. But the way I kind of see it is, I like the, I mean, okay, it's called Pretty in Pink, so obviously Molly Ringwald's character is the main character, but I do like the character growth that Blaine goes through, that, you know, he's able to tell off his rich snobby friend Steph off and actually have a change of heart, and realize that to be with Andy, you have to be willing to accept her for who she is rather than who he kind of wanted her to be. You know, and the perfect example was that he took her to the house party where she wasn't going to fit in at all. So I think he learned a good lesson throughout the course of the movie. So I think I like that aspect of it to suggest that he had character growth to go through as well. He did. And that they end up together as a result. Maybe, yeah, it's a premature I love you. But maybe. But again, for the sake of, like, you know, there it's an hour and a half movie. I still think it progressed well enough to merit it. Even though, yes, in real life, and after 2 days, you probably don't say that. But after the course of, like, you know, watching these characters, like, interact with each other for an hour and a half and figure, okay, it's time for you to go ahead and mention that.
I think she should have dumped them both and walked off away from the prom and found true love later on in her life.
Okay, well, if that were the case, then we never would have gotten this amazing, awesome OMD song. So
that's true.
Okay, so that's what I want to talk about now. So actually, it's very interesting. So with the original ending, OMD had actually written a song for the soundtrack, the song Goddess of Love, and I'll insert the audio clip here so you guys can hear it for yourselves. Apparently, with the change of the ending, John Hughes was panicking. He didn't think that song Goddess of Love was going to fit. So he actually contacted OMD to actually write a new song. So I want to insert this audio clip too. This is the guys from OMD, Andy McCluskey and Paul Humphreys, talking about their experience of having to write the song If You Leave within, like, you know, 24-hour notice. They had to come up with a song. So let's go ahead and do this here.
Shall we listen to this beautiful piece of pink vinyl?
Yeah, drop that needle.
Okay, old school.
So, Andy, this wasn't the song we had in mind for this Pretty in Pink.
It wasn't film, even was supposed it? To be a song. We wrote a totally different song, didn't we? We went down to Paramount Studios and met John and Molly and John Cryer, and they gave us the script, and we went home to England and wrote the song for the prom scene where Molly was supposed to end up with Ducky.
With Ducky, yeah. But then they did a testing. And the people just wanted Molly
the teenage girls.
The teenage
girls.
Okay,
wanted
the teenage
Molly
girls
to end up with the pretty boy.
Yeah.
So they re-scripted it and reshot it.
And then we got into LA, didn't we, with our tape of Goddess of Love, the original song for the film, to mix it. And then we get this urgent message from John Hughes saying, can you contact us urgently because the song you've got is not going to work for the end of the film now.
Where was our equipment? We were starting a tour somewhere else.
San Francisco.
That's right. So that's why it wasn't in LA. So we had to hire equipment.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why we wrote this in a completely different way to normal, because we didn't use any of the synths or the computers. No. Whilst we were waiting for the rental equipment, you sat at the piano and just started playing chords.
And you were scribbling words like crazy. And
old school, which we never work in.
That's the only song ever that we've written that way, because we usually start with mad noises and crazy ideas, and then the tune goes on last.
Yeah. But we got lucky.
We got lucky. I think 9 times out of 10 when you do that and you're under such pressure, because we had 2 days before the tour started, didn't we? So 9 times out of 10 when you do that, you come up with a piece of crap.
But do you remember the next day? Because we did a demo, put onto a cassette, and we set it on a motorcycle to Paramount like about 3 in the morning, and we went to bed, and it took ages to get to sleep, and then, what seemed like 2 minutes later, we get a phone call at 8:30 from our manager saying, oh, John's heard it. He loves it. Go back in the studio and finish it. We're like, oh, no. Out of bed after 2 hours sleep. And
so that was 2 days. And then we started the tour. And then we needed to wait for a day off on tour to come back, fly back to LA to mix it, didn't we? We couldn't get the studio we wanted. So we ended up in Giorgio Moroder's personal studio mixing it there, didn't we?
Which was pretty cool to go to Giorgio Moroder's
studio. It's a shame he wasn't there. So I'd love to have met him.
That would have been the icing on the cake.
It was a cool studio.
And then, you know, The only parameter for this song was that it had to be 120 beats a minute because they'd filmed the prom dancing to Don't You Forget About Me.
That's right, yeah.
And when we went to the premiere, which was exciting, you know, limo, red carpet, all the Hollywood pizzazz, we sat there through the whole film waiting. On comes the song. Nobody's dancing in time to the music. Right, we're like, what was the point of telling us how, what tempo it had to be at? Nobody, who edited this film? Yeah, you know?
I think they changed the edit in the end because we were moaning.
Oh, dear. Do you remember the video?
Yes, we did it on the A&M lot, which was Charlie Chaplin's
soundstage. Yeah. And do you also remember going shopping for clothes?
Yes. Maxfield's, was it?
Maxfield's, which was so up its own backside, there wasn't a front door.
That's right.
You had to phone them and they'd let you in the back door.
And we spent a stupid amount of money, didn't we?
Yeah, we spent... Was it about $25,000 in half an hour?
Yes, something like that.
And you look at the video now and I'm looking at the clothes and going,
really?
We spent how much on that? Somebody saw us coming.
They saw us coming, yeah.
It was nuts. And then remember... Because the song originally was over 5 minutes long and they made us edit and edit and edit.
Yeah, because they wouldn't play it as 4 minutes on the radio, do you remember?
Yeah.
It had to be cut down to 4 minutes. But because of all the key changes that we did, we couldn't find a place to cut it.
No.
So what did we do?
Well, in fact, this bit here that is supposed to not exist, because the song is actually 4:25 and we couldn't cut it shorter.
Yep.
But we just wrote on the box 4:02 and gave it to the label.
Before the digital.
And nobody ever checked there was an extra 23 seconds on
we
it.
We just pretended it was 4 minutes when really it was still 4:25.
That's how you write your biggest hit in North America.
And it served us really well.
Yeah.
It served us really well. I mean, you know, it's even on the TV and commercials still now. I saw it on CNN last night. Yeah.
There's no escape from if you leave.
So, yeah, we see that they decide they want to change the ending, and, of course, they have to change the song. And the reshot ending resulted in Andrew McCarthy coming in, like, having to wear a wig, because I guess he cut his hair. He was doing, like, a stage play or something like that. So it looks a little off. And then, of course, they have to get a new song because, again, John Hughes didn't feel that the song Goddess of Love was going to work. So it's so interesting for me to hear the fact that the guys from OMD were saying, hey, we were given, like, we have 2 days to prepare the song because they gave us the worst timing. Hey, we're about to leave on tour. We're not going to be able to give you a song unless we do something and put something together in less than 2 days. And sure enough, they come up with the band's most beloved, best song in North America. Ranked number 4 on the Billboard Top 100 in May of 86, which leads me to be befuddled and thinking, what 3 songs was better than OMD's If You Leave?
You should pick that up sometime.
Yeah, I should.
Insert that into this podcast when we're done.
I'll take a look, see if I can find what songs were ahead of it. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely love this song. So for those longtime listeners, you know I'm a huge fan of 80s new wave. So the bands like Depeche Mode, The Cure, Duran Duran, The Smiths, New Order. Then, of course, OMD. The song I listened to constantly into my early teens, into my later teens. When Star 98.7 Star FM would play, they would do like their 80s flashback on Friday nights. It was so cool to hear this song. So I absolutely love this song. In fact, to be honest, I don't know if you've ever taken the time to think about what dates we've been on that are like our absolute best and most favorite.
Mm-mm.
I actually picked my top 3. Okay. All-time favorite dates. The OMD concert that we did in the summer last year in 2025 is my number 2 all-time favorite date.
Wow. What was 1 and 3?
One would be our very first Valentine's at the house with no key, really fancy restaurant while we were in Honolulu dating.
Yeah.
And number 3, probably the Jersey Boys, the show that we did in Vegas when we'd been married for 6 months. We were celebrating our 6-month anniversary. And it was very cool, very high end. You know, those Vegas shows, like something like kind of silly like Blue Man Group, I guess those Vegas shows are really like, you know, prestigious and kind of cool, and people think of it as being a really great date. So Jersey Boys, like, that was really awesome. But yeah, but sitting together in the at the Greek Theater, beautiful summer night, stars sort of lighting up the sky, and the two of us like arm around each other just singing, if you leave. This is some amazing memorable night for me. So So, I mean, I can't say enough great things about this song. And to think that if they'd gone with the original ending, OMD would have never written this song.
That's true. That's all a reason right there to have the original ending not happen.
Yeah. So to me, it's maybe the most one of the most fascinating ending changes ever done to a movie because of how it drastically changed and because of the song we got as a result. So again, yeah. I'm always fascinated to just learn things about this particular movies. In fact, the learning this in recent times has actually given me a more love and appreciation for this movie.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a beautiful song, a beautiful classic ending to a movie because of the song. And it's just like what you think of when you hear about this movie. So it's perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I take back all my grumpy complaining, and I love the song, and you're right.
Okay. And I have one bit more of information to share with you, Allison, that I think you'll find particularly enjoyable, and I think it's going to make you love the song even more.
Okay.
Were you aware that when Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton got married, they danced to this song as their first song as husband and wife at their wedding?
No.
Okay. Let me play an interesting clip for you now, then. Let's dive into this clip here.
What's your first song? Can you tell me? I have ideas.
It's called the Wedding March.
Blake Shelton can't wait to marry Gwen Stefani. The country crooner was on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, where he talked about his future wedding with the pop star, saying that for their first dance, they might go with an iconic song from the 80s.
And now, time for the first dance, the couple's first dance. And then what do we hear?
It's If You Leave. From the Pretty in Pink soundtrack.
That's not true at all.
I swear, I have it right here.
OMD?
We've talked about this. We both love the song. We're both fans of the 80s. Why not? Why not, Jimmy?
Yeah, so actually, I'm willing to say that I love Blake Shelton even more now. I got to more appreciate his music for, you know, being married to you, and then obviously Gwen Stefani loves him. So, but to hear that story again, it was an interview he did on Jimmy Fallon during the pandemic. It was a virtual interview, so probably in 2020, and Access Hollywood was covering the stories. That's why you got to hear those little clips there. But yeah, he insisted that the first song that they would dance together as husband and wife was in fact going to be "If You Leave" by OMD.
I love how Jimmy Fallon knew who it was from.
Yeah.
Like, he was the one who was like, OMD.
Yeah. Well, Blake was about to say Orchestra Maneuvers in the Dark. I think he just kind of got cut off a little bit. So, true, you wouldn't think that that a country singer would really be into like a 80s new wave, as it were. I mean, a lot of people, like you mentioned, probably know the song, but maybe, who's the name of the band? Oh, that's the name of the band. Okay. But yeah, again, it's a testament to just how timeless the song is that a lot of people will probably recognize it, maybe don't know the original artist, but can immediately remember, it's from the 80s movie Pretty in Pink, and it's a really awesome, great song.
Some people, as in this person.
Yeah.
I didn't know. When you said we were going to their concert, I'm like, who's that? And then when you said that song, I was like, oh my gosh, that'd be awesome. So I'm one of those people that didn't know who they were until then.
Oh, very cool. So hopefully I converted you to being a fan, or at least loving that song, which I'm sure you already did beforehand. So.
Yeah, and hopefully I'm converting you to love Blake Shelton even more.
We'll see. Yeah, but probably. But yeah, again, it all stems from the idea. Hey, so if they go with the original ending and Ducky ends up with Andy and they never write that song, what would a Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton have danced to? I don't know.
Sad story.
Maybe another like 80s song, because again, he mentioned that he loved the 80s too. So,
well, can we just sidetrack for just a second and say that I think that's one of the few genres that you and I both agree on as well, mm-hmm. is 80s music.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So often, like when I think about music we want to listen to together, it's hard to find a lot of options that we both really just love. Mm-hmm. But I can always go well with 80s music.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So that's Pretty in Pink. Again, I'm sure many people have fond memories of the music. Again, like, yeah, so many great bands, but along with OMD. So the Smiths, New Order, the Psychedelic Furs, who are the namesake of the movie and song of itself. Again, you could say that maybe it's not necessarily like the greatest as far as like the story, as far as you know, romantic comedies, romantic dramas go, but again, because of how fascinating the concept and story of how the ending got changed and how much I love this music, it's definitely among my favorites, even though again, admittedly, I'm not the expert when it comes to these type of movies.
Well, I think it's still really good. I still remember the first time that I saw Ducky show up at the prom and go, oh my gosh, he's really there. And I, So, like, it's still got a really good storyline. And yes, the music helps. And yes, the ending changing helps. But I think it's still good.
Yeah. Oh, and also another side note that I wanted to bring up too. So again, we don't see it here in the podcast, but so when Andy goes after Blaine and Ducky's kind of just there, you know, he, you know, good friend thing. He did something nice for his friend. We get to see a blonde girl kind of giving him the eye, like, oh, hey, hell, what's going on? And he's like, who, me? Like, oh yeah, yes, you. That was actually the film debut of Christy Swanson, who would go on to play Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the original movie before Sarah Michelle Gellar would play her on the TV show.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so a couple of years later after this movie, she would be slaying vampires in a high school gym instead of dancing at the prom.
That's cute. I love that.
But so yeah, Ducky got love in the end. Andy got the guy he wanted, or the guy that she wanted, rather. And it's interesting that for anyone listening, I mean, if you go and reach out to Allison and I and let us know, who would you have gone with? Would you have gone with Blaine? Would you have gone with Ducky? Would you have gone with neither guy? Again, I'm fascinated to learn that. And are you happy, just as I am, that the ending got changed because we got that OMD song as a result?
Interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this trip down memory lane celebrating the 40th anniversary of Pretty in Pink. Again, I always love talking 80s movies. And yeah, especially the 80s movies that have music that I love. So anything else to add? Or are we good to wrap up?
Stay pretty.
Stay pretty in pink, yes. Okay, thanks everybody. You've been listening to the Casting for Fun podcast. Allison, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for giving me your time.
Same.
Okay, we'll catch you guys next time. Thank you.
Bye.